Good evening and welcome to Gay Card, right here on Reality Radio 101.
But right now we're going to take a listen to an interview I did with actor Verona Blue just hours before the Midnight Madness premiere of VHS 99 at the 2022 Toronto International Film Festival. Let's take a listen to that interview right now. Welcome to the program, Verona Blue.
Hi, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thanks for coming on. Of course, VHS 99 playing at TIFF, part of the Midnight Madness program, and of course is coming to Shudder October 20th. Very exciting. This is kind of, the past 10 years, this has become like a cult anthology following. Like, people love the VHS movies. So when you got booked for this, how excited were you?
I mean, so here's the thing. I used to watch a ton of horror, like a ton of horror. And then I think I hit a point in like my daily life and stress where I was like, I don't have room to be scared for entertainment anymore. Like, I just, the real world is terrifying and I can't handle it anymore. So there was like a period where I kind of like walked away from horror. Like, I, all the sort of the hostile type of horror like is not for me. And I think that kind of went on for a long time in like the early, you know, 2010s. But then like the found footage thing as an anthology offers so many unique ideas.
Yeah.
You know, like Blair Witch, when it came out, like really tricked us. Like, they had, I think the website is probably still on like Wayback Machine. Like, people really didn't know if it was real or not.
Yeah.
And then to be reinvented again with Paranormal Activity, and now in VHS, you have all of these different directors and writers who like have their own vision of like what found footage would be if it was them, that it's a little actually terrifying to be part of it because the bar is so high. Like, what if people don't like it? What if they, you know, it's like a little bit scary to be part of something that's like so acclaimed and loved. But at the same time, I'm so hopeful that people just love the whole thing, but love our segment, that I'm like welcomed into the horror community. I'm really excited about that.
Right. Of course. Yeah. And you're like, basically the segment you're in, Shredding, kind of kicks off the film.
Yeah.
Directed by Maggie Levin. I kind of forgotten about 1999 because 1999 is kind of a gross year. If you notice, we all just kind of went, exactly. Yeah. Once like the scene started for Shredding, and it kind of feels like the old CKY videos and things like that it's like, oh yeah, right, the 90s was just everybody, 99 was everybody was kind of going crazy because some people thought the end of the world was coming. That's right.
Yeah.
And of course you played Deidre, who is part of the band Bitch Cat for Life.
Yeah.
And of course you're part of like the footage of the band playing and everything, of course, takes place a few years before that.
Yeah.
And watching that, I got very nostalgic for the old VH1 programming right there.
Yeah.
But so what was it like to be out there being a rocker?
Man, I've always wanted to be in a band, but I played the flute, and I don't care what anybody says. People are like, but Lizzo. I was like, me and Lizzo, nothing in common. She maybe can make it cool because she has like the marching band thing. There's no cool really application for the flute.
Right.
So I took drum lessons for a couple of years, like as an adult, when I realized one day that I could do whatever I wanted. But like being in this fake band where somebody else wrote the song, somebody else plays the song, somebody else sings the song, and I just get to wear the outfit and rock out. Amazing. Yeah. It was so cool.
You got to be the Monkees.
Yeah. So good. Milli Vanilli. It was like all the best parts of being in a band without any of the hard work.
That's what you want. That's what you want. You want that rock star life without any of the years of working on a craft. Totally.
Or talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get to see you as a band, but then of course the elements of the story get darker and things happening in 1999 in the basement of a club that's kind of become like a tomb. During those parts, did you get to put on the prosthetics and be a part of that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That whole part of the costume was wild. So for the prosthetics, it's actually a mask. So instead of having to like, you know, apply and apply and apply makeup, they did the full head cast thing. which I'd never had done before. And I was sitting there at the makeup shop and they're like, are you claustrophobic? And I was like, I guess we're about to find out. I was fine. And they're like, you know, it's 30 minutes total. Like, we're here the whole time. We'll talk to you. And there's people like constantly tapping your shoulder, letting you know. And then this stuff starts to go over my eyes. And I was like, uh-oh, I think I'm claustrophobic. And then, you know, you have this mask. So the thing that was cool about the mask is like, it's finished, right? So instead of having stuff glued to your face, it's totally done. It was not easy to take on and off necessarily by yourselves because of the rest of that prosthetics. And I didn't really have the best vision because they all have eye covers.
Yeah.
So I kind of have these like little slits that I'm kind of like trying to see out of. It was gnarly. It was really gross. The way that they do it's a very Freddy Krueger-y effect, right? So they take like an adhesive that they put on your skin. And then they take cotton batting and they kind of like dab it so it kind of sticks to you.
Right.
And then they take unscented warm gelatin, which does have a scent, and they just start like applying it with a brush. And so you have this like warm goo. So then they wait for it to dry and then they like add more warm goo and it creates that burn texture, right? Like Freddy Krueger has. And then they take a special kind of paint and start adding the sort of layers of the redness and the inflammation and everything. So yeah, like that was several hours of just sitting there. This smells disgusting. I mean, looks really cool especially when you're getting it done. I had my phone out. I was like, this is awesome. But then we did like our full fingers. So like you can't touch anything. Then you're walking around like this disgusting monster trying to like drink your Diet Coke with a straw through the mouth of the thing. It's terrifying all of the people on set, even though it's the middle of the day.
Oh my God. Yeah. Walking around like that and doing it all with basically about 10% of your vision. Fantastic.
Yeah. And also, you know, a lot of it's shot in the dark. So they've made this like really ominous set dressing and there's all this like jaggy whatever. And I was like, I'm going to walk directly into that spike. I can't see it. Yeah. I cannot maneuver around it. I can't see my feet. If you could just make sure I have a clear path, I would be very grateful. Because they'd be like, okay, action. And then they're like, okay, go. And then you have to kind of run to your next position, you know? And I was like, oh, I'm gonna get impaled for real. So if somebody could help me. It was weird and fun for sure.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds pretty fun. Well, the finished product, of course, loads of fun.
Yeah. So you saw it at TIFF.
I saw it last night. It is a wild ride.
Cool.
Never lets up. It was the perfect opener for the piece, which was great. Yeah. Aside from just being in this, I look at your work and I'm like, oh my God, she is just like, what can I do? What can I do? You need me to do stunts? You need me to do voices? You need me to jump around? You need me to do motion capture? You're all over the place. So is it like, are you like in a constant state of like need to be working?
I'm in a constant state of if I just like literally love acting and I will do anything.
Right.
Like I have a very specific look. Obviously Deidre is a more extreme version of that, but I'm still, the tattoos are still real. The hair is still real.
Yeah.
The piercings are still real. I have a very specific look, which, you know, people are more used to seeing every single day in life. You know, it's not uncommon to see blue hair and tattoos anymore, but still on television, it's kind of uncommon. Like you see more men with tattoos and they're kind of always like gangsters or like Latino, you know, prison guys. There's just like not a lot of, I hesitate to say like representation of like your average goth girl on TV these days.
Yeah, I've noticed. Yeah, because I've noticed a lot of your performances, bartender, weed seller, like these things. Yeah.
It's like a specific segment of life that I sort of fall into. So in terms of the work, like give me a character that like is an everyday person that just happens to look like this, like, you know, that works at an office that has a mortgage. Like I would love to play like a normal person who also looks like this, because I am a normal person who looks like this, who lives and exists in the world. And it would be great to not just sort of play a costume, which is what happens a lot of times. It's like I get hired, I embody the costume and then the character is sort of the costume. I love acting. I love storytelling and I love it across all mediums. If they want me to do a video game, there. They want me to do the background voices for the thing, there. Like you asked me to do it. I'm already on set. You know?
Yeah, of course. And like, that's the thing. It's like background voices. You've kind of become a number of background voices throughout the more recent Star Wars films.
Yeah.
How did you fall into that gig?
A lot of luck. I had met the head of Skywalker Sound, Matthew Wood, years ago socially, and we kind of kept in touch. And then he had been doing conventions because he does the voice for General Grievous in Episode 3. So he had, you know, he does the convention circuit. And when I was in theater school in England, he was like, hey, I'm going to be like in your area. Do you want to have lunch or whatever? And so we just kind of kept in touch. And so while I was in theater school and he was being a successful Star Wars guy, you know, we were still chatting regularly. And so when the opportunity came for him to start putting together the loop group, which is what you call these group of people who do the background voices for movies and television shows. He needed people. So here's the thing with Star Wars. They don't tell you anything.
Yeah.
Normally, if you're working on something, they'll tell you in advance, at least a rough idea of what you're working on. So you can prepare. You can make notes. You can think about it. Maybe they send you a script. Star Wars, nothing. You don't know anything until you literally get there on the day. So you have to already be extremely well-versed in the universe. I'm sure Marvel is the same way. And I'm sure like the Lord of the Rings is the same way. You have to know everything about everything. You already have to know what the universe sounds like. You have to know what the robots sound like. You have to know what various aliens sound like, whether something sounds like Huttese or doesn't sound like Huttese. Like, you can't bring someone who doesn't know about Star Wars into a Star Wars loop group because it's too hard. Like, there's no help. Once you're there, it's just this weird competition among all of these nerds about who's the most Star Warsian. You know, it's always Sam Witwer, incidentally. He's the biggest Star Wars nerd on the
planet. Yeah, that makes sense. Witwer breathes him. Star Wars. Yeah.
It's hilarious. It's always him. It's terrifying. But yeah, so I was invited to join this loop group because I was such a huge Star Wars fan. And I happened to know somebody who was putting together the group. So I was invited one time, was the first female stormtrooper in the series. And then I guess did a good job and was able to come back a bunch more times. Didn't screw it up. So they let me come back.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. That's awesome. So you're now part of a galaxy far, far away, which is fantastic.
Forever and in whitish, bluish letters.
That's definitely a cool thing to have on your resume. Totally.
Yeah, really is.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. As I mentioned, you know, you've multifaceted. You've done so many different jobs in acting, and you've also written and produced. I've seen some of your shorts, and I wanted to know, do you have stuff on the go right now of any other projects that you've been developing?
I have some ideas. 2017 was like not a great year for me. Like a lot. My dog died, and my dad died, and my house like leaked, and the whole thing kind of had to be deconstructed, and it was like living in ET with all the plastic sheets.
Oh,
and there was just like a lot of like not great things happened. And I've kind of wanted to make something humorous about like how terrible life is for a while. People would be like, how are you? And I'd be like, terrible. Thanks for asking. And I kind of think like that is really representative, I think, of a lot of people's experiences at some point in their life, just like when it rains, it pours. And sometimes the thing that pours is like the worst possible news.
Mm-hmm.
So I've kind of been like playing with that a little bit. And I used to have this YouTube show called The People's Pantry that people who watched it really loved, where I made the world's most disgusting recipes from like community cookbooks, like church cookbooks from the 70s, you know, like, you know, the cookbooks were like, the school says, everybody submit a cookbook. We're going to photocopy, collate it, send it back to you for $5 and then buy soccer uniforms. Like those kinds of cookbooks. Yeah. And those recipes are not good. They're bad recipes. They have bad instructions. They are not edited. Sometimes the ingredients are missing. And so
the parents tell their kid how to make it and their kid writes it down and they're going to forget two or three things. Yeah.
Right. So I used to have this show where I made these recipes and then I would make my husband try them because there's no way in the world that I was going to like eat cream of shrimp, anything. I've been thinking of bringing that back for TikTok specifically because I think it's right for the format.
Mm-hmm.
But other than these kind of like little ideas, I've mostly been trying to focus on like just finding that right television show where I can like get my little claws in, you know.
Right. Sink your teeth in. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I look forward to that and I look forward to see where you pop up next. And it was a fun ride. Shredding is balls to the wall of fun and the entire VHS 99. It really made me go, wow, yeah, we were really gross in 99. Like all this shit.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad we all grew up from that. I don't think we could have stayed that way. Definitely not.
I mean, with internet, you know, if you go to the right place, I feel like it probably still exists.
Oh, somewhere. It still exists. Yeah, yeah. It's just at that time, it was everywhere.
Oh,
everybody was kind of like that.
Yeah. The novelty.
Verona, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. And of course, I really look forward to people getting to check out VHS 99 coming to Shudder on October 20th. Have yourself a great Midnight Madness.
Thank you. I got to say, as someone who's from Toronto, I grew up in Toronto, having a show, a movie at TIFF, and I get to go to it, and it's a Midnight Madness, which is easily the best part of TIFF, is such a bucket list. It's so cool. So I'm so excited to see it with an audience, with a Midnight Madness audience, to be able to like be here and do it. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Thank you so much.
Definitely.
It's been fun.
Yeah, no, well, I hope you have the greatest time. Of course, now that this year they got the new Royal Alex location for it, so should be a pretty packed house. So have a great time tonight.
Thanks, I appreciate it. It's so nice chatting with you.
Nice chatting with you too. Have yourself a great one.
Thanks, you too.